Sign up! This is the OTP presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Plan on paying less for the coverage that you need with Farm Bureau Health Plans. Get a quote today at fbhp.com. I'm Amy Wells, and we have all returned to Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park here in Nashville. Rhett Bryan is here. Coach Mack, of course, is here. And Ramon Foster. We're all recovering from the week that was in Indianapolis at the 2024 Scouting Combine. And so I figured we had to all get together and kind of just debrief, really review what has happened, and then we can move forward with the pre-draft process. And I guess we should start with Ramon, who was at his first scouting combine as a observer, as an analyst, as opposed to a participant. What did you think?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. You got an opportunity to see the NFL work. This wasn't like a bunch of outsiders or people trying to sell you product. This was about the game. Well, there was something that can enhance the players as far as that type of product placement, or just simply watching agents be at dinner with their players, watching coaches walk around downtown Indianapolis and just be guys, and just seeing the different circles and groups and the players start to come in. You realize that, okay, we're closer. We're one step closer. And I enjoyed being on that side of it, of course, where some real reporting was going on. It wasn't just rumors and that type of stuff. And if you know the game, too, as far as it goes, and Coach Mack, we've talked about this before, that's also where the pre-free agency sets itself up. You understand that's the case. And just how serious it is to see different GMs of different teams walk through the hotels and on the streets, and just everybody has their room, and everybody has their section of Indianapolis that they're working through. But I was also more impressed, too, with watching with, you know, analysts' eyes and not players' eyes, being shocked by it, how interconnected Indianapolis is. You have the breezeways that you don't have to walk outside, where the hospitals and the hotels and the convention centers and stuff like that. It's a unique place. And on this side, I enjoyed seeing it without a whole lot of pressure and anxiety on me, too.
Well, I'm excited to add Ramon to the Keep the Combine in Indianapolis Forever Club. We have jackets. I'll get you one.
Thank you. Thank you. Look at that. She gets gifts after the fact.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. Rhett, you've been to the Combine with us a bunch of times. We had the opportunity to talk to a lot of different guests here on the OTP. What conversation stuck out to you as being exceptionally interesting?
I think I'm always intrigued by what Daniel Jeremiah is watching, because he's done it for a living. He's been a scout and has been around for a long time in that regard, played college football. And so I'm always interested to hear not only what his top 50 is as he gets closer in this process, but positionally what he's watching for, numbers as it pertains to that first round of the draft, all those kinds of things. Always interested in what he has to say. Charles Davis, always. And then I enjoyed our conversation with Cynthia Freeland, too. It was so good with the numbers. She just brings it with the numbers.
Mac, you've been to every combine that has ever taken place.
In the history of Indianapolis.
In the history of Indianapolis. What made 2024 a little unique from past combines?
Well, it's a television show now. I mean, it really is. And I will say this, and again, I'm as old school as it gets with the combine, because I've been there from the start. I was there from when nobody could get in except players and coaches. That was it. I thought that the fans being there added a whole lot to it. I thought the fans were great. There were 16,000 fans in the stands Saturday morning.
Wow.
I mean, it was – you could feel the juice and the energy in there. You could tell that the players did too. And the coaches. I sit with different position group coaches the whole time, or different people come up and sit with me. And everybody commented, you know what? Because, you know, the first thought was they're going to have – people there, how's that going to be? It was great. The fans being there were outstanding. And then, you know, to be there in, on a historic run, the fans just they lost it. But they went crazy, and it added to the event. Even the last day, Sunday, when the offensive linemen were working out, there were probably 3,000 fans there, and they applauded every one of them as they ran, and they did so. I enjoyed the fans being there. I really did this time. I thought it was the best representation of the fans since they started allowing fans to come.
It seemed to me, as we were just kind of milling about, one of the conversations that were taking place in Indianapolis a lot was that teams are kind of changing their approach to the combine week. Not that they aren't coming or that they're not still ingesting the information that you need to get, but the approach is a little bit different. Is that something that you observed while you were there? Because you stayed there even longer than the Titans radio crew did.
Yeah, well, there were five head coaches that didn't come. So that's 27 that did. So everybody is still taking information from the combine. But what is going on now, the schedule has changed. The schedule's changed at the combine. Used to be, Amy, you would stay – everybody'd have to stay all week because the interviews went on all week. And the interviews started at 6 o'clock at night. They started at 6 o'clock at night. So once the interview started, you were there from 6 to 11:30 or 12 interviewing and then up at 6 o'clock the next morning to go catch the weightlift. They've changed the schedule so that now the interviews are earlier in the week. So if you get your interviews out of the way, you can go. Now, position coaches still stay. All the suites still had people in them, all right? But I think now changing the schedule the way they did allowed guys to come in, get their work done, and then leave rather than have to stay the entire week. Now, some people stayed the entire week, myself included, and most of them did. But I think the change in the schedule, I think it's better for the coaches as far as just organization-wise, and it's much better for the players. It's much better for the players. Now you don't have any late night meetings.
Let's talk a little bit about these players and some of the work that we saw in the field. And I want to start with quarterbacks. Red, I'll start with you. Were there any guys who really did a lot to help themselves this week, kind of make some money in Indianapolis?
So a couple that come to mind. One is just because some of the top-tier quarterbacks didn't work out. So this is addition by subtraction, and that would be J.J. McCarthy from Michigan. There were 18 players from that national championship team invited, most ever by one college outfit in any of the previous combines. And because Jaden Daniels didn't work out there, and Caleb Williams and Drake May. So, you know, those things, I think, helped him really have a chance to put himself as probably the fourth quarterback taken on night one of the draft. And then the quarterback from Tulane, Pratt, he really had a nice combine. Had a 36-inch vertical leap. I think he led all quarterbacks in that regard. And we saw him at Mobile. And of course, Tajay Spears has been telling me about Pratt for a couple of years now. But he's a guy that, including Daniel Jeremiah, thinks that he's going to get a chance to play in the league at some point. Now, he won't be night one, Thursday night, first round take guy. But those two guys, I think, helped themselves this last week.
I think for sure, like Rhett said, it's able to the opt out of some of these other guys enabled, I would say, a Joe Milton be put on highlight a little bit more. And I'll say this, coaches love measurables. And at some point, some coaches are going to think they can coach him up. The same way I feel about Spencer Rattler. I don't think he had the greatest showing at the combine as far as Spencer Rattler goes, but he was there, he was available, and you got an opportunity to see him. Now coaches know what they have the opportunity to work with, and it's the same way I feel about him and Michael Penix Jr. Those dudes were guys that stayed there and dropped the deep ball, and maybe they missed, they didn't connect with the receivers down the field, but you got an opportunity to see the throwing motion, you got an opportunity to see some of the touch that they had, and the ability that they will compete. And I think those guys need it. I think Joe Milton needed it. I think Spencer Rattler needed it. And I think Michael Penix Jr. did also. And they were middle of the road, I think. But, of course, you look at their projections and what you can see in their skill set. And they put it on display. Joe's touch was actually better, I feel like, than it was at the Senior Bowl. I thought Spencer Rattler, from what we saw him at the Senior Bowl, took a step back. But in the spirit of competition, Coach Mack always reminds us, don't be an instant evaluator. And in that, just because he had a so-so combine throwing, I think his pro day can bode well for him with his receivers and what he's capable of. First rounder, no. But as far as depth and growth in the league, he'll have the opportunity.
Mac, with some guys making a name for themselves in Indianapolis, with some guys sitting out, how is that going to impact the rest of this draft? Because I know you always talk about the quarterback draft and then everybody else.
Yeah, well, I think J.J. McCarthy put himself as the fourth quarterback. He put himself as a fourth quarterback. So what that means is there's teams at 10, 11, and 12 that need a quarterback. They may be looking to trade up because those top three will be gone. So J.J. McCarthy has put himself in that conversation. Now the rest of them that showed up, they are second and third day guys. They're second, third day guys. Whatever flavor you would like to take on them, they're there. Spencer Rattler had a better Senior Bowl than he did a combine, but at least he did both. I thought you know, as Ramon said, Michael Penix was fine. Milton, look, you know, every time you go, it's going to be a carnival seeing how far he can throw it and how deep he can throw it. You know, that's number one. And so I don't think he changed anybody's mind about what he is and where he will be. But J.J. McCarthy elevated himself into that next level here in the first round, where somebody may trade up to get him and may try to jump up to either 5, 6, or 7, which would include the Titans, to try to get a quarterback.
Brett, the wide receivers group is a group that we've talked about over and over and over and over again. Did it live up to their billing this week?
I would say so. That's another takeaway from the combine overall, is it seems like players are getting faster every year, regardless of position. But 9 wide receivers, 9 of them with a sub 4.4 40-yard dash, and a lot of them way south of that, including the man who broke the record and Xavier Worthy from Texas. You know, in the conversation that we had with Daniel Jeremiah, and I can't remember who else we talked to for that week for the OTP.
Jordan Reed.
Yeah, and Jordan Reed too. We were talking about, you know, how many receivers just might go in the first round. I think that number went up after last week. 7 to 8 was kind of the number in my mind. I think it's closer to 10 now.
Do you agree with that?
I do too. And the thing that I don't want to do is minimize. I've heard some people make the conversation, well, they're training for the 40. Say what you want to about it. These guys are just fast. You don't have this amount of guys in a sub 4.4s running this speed if they're just not getting fast. It's called, Mac like to say sometimes, believe what your eyes are telling you. Like, believe what you're seeing. And Ladd McConkey, you have Ricky Pearsall, even in the 4.4s, these guys are running. And then for the ones like Xavier Leggett is a guy I think ran high 4.4, maybe 4.5. You don't deny his playmaking ability, though. That's the conversation that you're having, too, is, yeah, the 40 means a lot. But you look at these guys separate on the field and the amount of volume that they have catching balls in college. And, of course, when they're coming up, the incorporation of 7-on-7. This is what they do. This is where they're specializing in. And I enjoyed watching those guys run. But not just that. They're performing at a rate that you say to yourself, if you don't get that top first rounder that you want, the quality – and quantity at this point is there for you in the second, third, fourth round also.
Well, like Rex said, there were 9 wide receivers under 4.4, and I sat with the receiver coaches. And I mean, everybody was amazed. I mean, it was just time after time, you know, 4.4 nothing, 4.3 not. I mean, all of that stuff. There were 7 wide receivers taken in the first round in 2004, okay? I think the number will be 8 this year. There will be 8 in the first round this year, because to me, I mean, that was an incredible showing. And by the way, Leggett ran a 4.39 there, so he put a 4.39 up. So and Leggett didn't have the greatest Senior Bowl, but he re-emerged himself with his workout at the combine. You could see it. You know, his vertical jump was 40 inches. He was a 10.6 broad jumper, 221 pounds. So he rebounded from the Senior Bowl. So the combine helped Leggett regain some traction.
Well, and Leggett was dealing with a left ankle or a lower leg injury on his left leg during the Senior Bowl a month before. So he clearly had put in the treatment time to get that worked out, and it worked out in this case. But to what they're saying about, you know, these testing numbers, yes, I think a lot of it is their confirmation on what scouts and evaluators have seen previously. Like, I think about that great OTP that you did with Dane Brugler of The Athletic. He said that fall in love with the tape, not the tag. And that he meaning the tag that you put on your big board in the war room. Don't fall in love with that name on that tag. Fall in love with the tape that you have seen. That is the evidence that you need to see for not only the skill set, but the athletic measurables, all those things.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because as you guys mentioned earlier, Xavier Worthy broke the record for 40 time at the combine. 4.21 was that time, which is rather quick. It's very exciting. It was really an exciting thing to watch. Mac, you were there. I'm sure it was bananas.
The place erupted. Let me tell you the story about it. You know, first of all, now the numbers that, you know, for the OT people, the numbers they post on television, those are not official numbers. And so when he ran his first, he ran a 4.25. All right, but the timers, of course, I know what was going on. The timers told him, "Hey, you're close." Because a lot of them hadn't faster than 4.25. He had taken his shoes off. He was done. And then when they told him, "Well, you're close," he went, "Okay." So he started lacing them back up, and the crowd went nuts when they saw him. Now, they were clear at the other end of the field, but they were watching him. He starts lacing them back up, and then people are going, "Wow." Because normally, you know, dudes run a good time. They're done, you know, with that part of it. And plus, I don't think he was going to do any drills anyway. He was there to run. All right, because if you know Worthy and you watch him, I mean he's 6'1", but the guy weighs 165 pounds. Okay, now don't let that fool you because he's got massive production at the University of Texas. He and A.D. Mitchell were legitimate dudes with the ball in the air there. So he starts lacing them back up. Well, then he gets back down there. Now everybody, the whole building, because he's the last one. They go alphabetically. Worthy W. I mean. I had a good education. It's at the end. So when he took off, everybody's going, you can tell. Some of those guys can run, and like I say, some of them can run, but this guy, run. I mean, everybody was watching that going, whoa. Okay, now, the time came out, okay, at 4.22. All right, and of course, he does a victory lap at 4.22, but that's not an official time. So I'm watching him, and all of a sudden, you know, one of the timers turns around to me and goes, and I go, so that's when I texted the whole Titans radio crew. I said, he may have 2-1.
Wow.
On the official. Well, TJ Houshmandzadeh was one of the receivers that was down there, you know, as a mentor to those guys. He and Michael Irvin and Steve Smith. Well, Michael Irvin and Steve Smith were doing a streaming thing. So all of a sudden I see TJ grab a group of guys and he goes over to Xavier Worthy and he starts looking, points to the phone and shows him this. And all of a sudden Worthy just screams and runs out of the building. He just takes off running right through the tunnel. And then so TJ Houshmandzadeh is on, come on back. And then he was telling him that the official was, you know, they'd already, it was 4-2-1. And so then later on they announced it. Well, that's why I sent it to you guys on that text chain. I said, he may be 4-2-1 official. And he was. And then after that, he was – that to me is – that's insane speed, really. You know, now he's got no pads on. But you watch him play. He plays fast. He's fast. But that was a moment that was it ignited the entire place. And there was a buzz about it inside for the rest of the time.
Does that impact his draft stock?
I don't think so. I don't think, because we knew he was fast. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden, you know, you were looking at a plow horse and he was a racehorse. I mean, he could always run. But just the fact, I tell you what may impact a little bit, just in coaches thinking, he laced his shoes back up and went again. The competitive nature of the dude going, you know what, I'm going to go after it, instead of just saying, I'm fine. I'm good. It's kind of like Roma Dunze did when he stayed, and I stayed and watched him do the three-cone drill about 15 times because he kept hitting the third cone, and they don't count it. And he says, I'm going to get it done. When everybody was gone, everybody was out of the building, and he was going to get it right. So you look at a lot of things in this, but what you try to glean from, you know, the perimeter of it is some of their competitiveness, and that will stick out big time. 4-2-1 will always be there in history. But just the fact that how he did it and went back and went after it, I appreciated that.
So I was watching this unfold on NFL Network, and I think I heard Rich Eisen and Daniel Jeremiah say that. I think it was like 16,000 fans there. You could the buzz was starting to build, and then when he popped it, I mean, it was amazing. The thing about his draft status, like the durability part of this for him, because, I mean, he officially came in at 5'11", 165. To put that in the context, the same conversations were had about Devontae Smith, a former Heisman Trophy winner from Alabama, who's the Eagles receiver. He was 175 at his combine and rang in at 6 feet and change. And then the guy who he broke the 40, John Ross, who was smaller, they worried about durability, and unfortunately that didn't work out for him. He was 188. So, I mean, this guy is skinny as a rail compared to what we're talking about here. So the durability in this is something that, you know, and of course somebody would say, well, Rhett, you got to catch him first. I'm like, odds are somebody's going to take the right angle and catch him and may hurt him.
Well, Ramon, when you see someone, you talk about kind of the mentality behind what he did running again. When he comes into a locker room, he's a rookie kid. That reputation is going to precede him a little bit. Is that something you like in a rookie and a teammate?
I do. And I'll say what Coach Mack said just a second ago to back up what he said, too. The fact that he had the record in hand, essentially, and ran again after taking the shoes off, that does show a competitive side. That does show if he loses a rep, he's going to go back to the front of the line and say, let's run that back. But here's the thing, when you become the fastest guy, you don't want that to just be your thing. Speed needs to show. But pass catching or whether you go to special teams need to be his specialty too. Because as a young rookie of his size, what, third, second round maybe at where you project a guy like him, he's going to have to be a teamer. Where are you fitting into the special teams first, if that's a part of your identity, or where can we incorporate you in these spot plays? When we put you out there in training camp, in OTAs and mini camp, we need to see that speed making plays. I've seen a lot of guys either be real strong, real big, real tall, all those types of things, but the utilization of what you're born with. He was born with that speed. 4.21 may have been trained into him, but you need to be able to see those types of things equate to the football field. It's just like, or you see slower receivers just continuously catch passes and stuff like that. Well, that's because they become a specialty of being a wide receiver. The speed is a caveat to what got you in the door. His ability to make plays with that speed is going to be something to where veterans I've seen in the locker room, whether you're a first rounder with a lot of praise or you're a guy that has a special tool like speed or strength or your ability to throw the ball really hard and fast, that doesn't matter in the NFL unless we actually see it on the field. And that's the beauty about it, too. And we've all had those conversations. The combine and these measurables get you in the door. Your playmaking ability keeps you in the door in those football facilities in those 32 cities.
One more thing about the speed. If you look at the top numbers in the combine over the last 10 years, there's really maybe, I know one guy, maybe two guys that turned out to really be players, players. CJ2K was a player. 4.24, he held it for a long time until John Ross, not such a great player. Just, you know, an up and down career. So, the speed is one factor, and that's to Ramon's point. I mean, it kind of is, you know, because everybody, if you're watching on television, that's the one thing you can equate to is that guy's fast. But, you know, the nuances of watching him work out, breaking down tape, grinding tape, all of that weighs a little bit more than the speed. But the speed part of it, if it is also with football ability, that's when you've got a player. So, as I said, if you look at the top 9 or 10 that have got the top speed in the history of the combine, not very many turned out to be just legendary players. CJ2K is a legendary player, you know. So anyway.
Yeah, that's the whole story of the draft as it has become more popular and become such a thing that everyone views, is that, okay, there's athletes out there, but are you a football player? Because if you got the marriage of the two, you probably got the makings of a really good player, maybe even an elite level player.
And to add to that, Coach Mack was saying, seeing John Ross, I was in a division that played him 2 times a year. And I never forget the tag that you carry when you're the fastest guy ever at the combine. We couldn't wait to see him. Why? Because I need to see your speed. And you know what happens when you get those veteran DBs that's been in the league for 7 years? They're going to punch you dead in your chest because, one, I know your featherweight. Two, can you escape and get off the line of scrimmage? And then if you can get past me, how fast are you to get open? It's one thing to be fast, but are you good enough to separate? That's one of the things we've liked about Ricky Pearsall when we watched him at the Senior Bowl and Ladd McConkey is you can get open. That's one of the things. I don't think Steve Smith, Senior, was a fast wide receiver. but he always got open. That's the separator to me when we look at those tools that you're born with naturally. It's what happens when you actually use them.
When I was a head coach, I drafted one of the slowest receivers in the combine 1 year. Had to have him.
Who was it?
Anquan Boldin. He ran 4.71.
That's okay.
Worked out pretty good.
Yeah, he was an okay player.
I think so.
SeatGeek is now the official ticketing partner of the Tennessee Titans. Whether you're buying or selling tickets to a Titans game or to any other live event in Nashville, SeatGeek is the place to do it. SeatGeek, the new official ticketing partner of the Tennessee Titans, so Titans fans can fan. Speaking of guys that don't run very fast, the offensive line. Sorry, Ramon.
No, wait a minute. I'm going to take a little umbrage to that.
Are you?
Yes, these guys ran this year, and I'm going to say something else, and then we can go on. You're directing this thing.
No,
I don't know why
great.
They make these big guys run 40 yards.
Tell it, Coach Matt.
They don't. They should run 20. The second group that ran, 4 hamstring pops out of the second group on the second run. No, one of them was on the first run. I don't know, and again, they've done it for years, but whenever you're looking at an offensive lineman, you look at my notebook, first thing I wrote was our 10-yard split. That's the split I looked at. I don't know why they make these big men run 40 yards. But anyway, go ahead.
So what's the alternative, though? Just make them run 10?
Or
don't
20.
Make them run at all?
20. Make them run 20.
20.
Okay.
20 in a cut, maybe, or set them up like it's a screen, 1-2 steps, and get out in space, because that's going to be where they're utilized more at. Offensive lineman running a 40 in a football game, you know what you call that? An interception in the other direction.
That.
An interception.
Because normally you're not asking those guys to do that.
No,
right.
At all.
Well, no,
in Mac's observation, of all those hamstring pops, they came between the 30 and 40-yard marks, every single one of them.
Yeah.
So 20, probably a better option.
But to that same conversation, though, these guys have gotten faster also.
Oh, yes.
It wasn't a lot of fours in this group, but they're teetering on 5-flat, 5.01, 5.02. You got a guy in Joe Alt at 6'9", and I think he added a little muscle to him too in this time, because I think they had him listed about 312. He used 320s.
321.
321. Ran a 5.05 at 6'9". Just his body size and length, you don't expect him to run like that at that weight. And it wasn't just him. Amarius Mims, I saw his second run live, and I said, oh, he moving. And if I'm not mistaken, he ran a 5.05 also. Yes, no, 5.07. And 340 pounds. Like, you don't move like that. And that's why I also think eventually the NFL, with where it is right now, and I've said this before, I think we're going to get back to a bruising style of ball. Like, I love the idea that we're passing the ball around, but these guys are so big and so fast and so agile now that you may be able to just build the running game the way it was. I'm not talking late 90s, early 2000s, but the idea that the run game may show its head more prevalent in today's game, I think we'll see more of that because these guys are so much bigger and faster and athletic than even, I mean, 5-6 years ago.
The drills they do for the offensive linemen are really good. Positional drills. They do the pin and pulls, and they time the pin and pulls. All of those things they do are really good. I just don't know what you're getting from a 40-yard dash.
Tell me what a pin and pull is. I don't know what that means.
I will tell you.
Thank you.
Ramon is the tackle.
Okay.
I'm the guard.
Okay.
The defensive player's right here. I am the pin guy. I'm going to block down on this guy.
Who's
and
in front
then
of
Ramon
you.
Is going to pull around me to move up on the linebacker.
Okay.
What it does is it replaces gaps for linebackers. It changes gap schemes. And then the down linemen always have to worry about not only the man over them that you're playing against, but they have to worry about the man to their inside. So you'll hear you hear me on the broadcast saying, well, this is a pin and pull scheme. You call it counter O, counter OT, call it whatever you want to. It's blocking down and then pulling linemen from the opposite side to swab a hole and create a new line of scrimmage on the opposite side.
Creating angles for run lanes. You're getting a guy, instead of having the defensive lineman come up the field, as Coach Mack just said, knock them off by hitting him in the hip. The guy pulling around, put him up on the second level to block the linebacker. Better angles that way, creating a hole.
But this is very informative here. They have good drills now for that, and they time it at the combine.
Rhett, in watching some of these drills and watching these guys work out, we had talked leading up to the combine that it seemed like there was a bit of a separation. There's a lot of talent within the offensive line group, but there were a couple who had separated themselves to be the elite at the top of the group, and then there was a little bit of a gap between the rest of them. Did anybody fill in that gap a little bit?
Tali Fuaga from Oregon State has probably helped his cause in that. I mean, he's if we're talking the week of the draft, I think Coach Mack and I would agree that in that first pod or tier of tackles, it's going to be Joe Alt, Olu Fashanu from Penn State, and then you can start to fill in a Tali Fuaga from Oregon State, you know, maybe an Amarius Mims, maybe from Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. I mean, there's several there that you're going to be – they're maybe going to be in the bottom of that first pod. But the first two that are there are still Joe Alt, Olu Fashanu.
Yeah, I think J.C. Latham is in that top tier. And Amarius Mims moved himself up. This is a mountain of a man. He is a mountain of a man. You see him standing next to normal humans down there on the floor, it's not even funny. But I think those guys there, but then as he says, you know, Rhett said the Fuaga, Tyler Guyton, Fontenot, the guy that kind of jumped up. Now, he's not in this level, but – you know, I like to watch lower tier guys too. Was a guy that we liked, that I liked, that we talked about at the Senior Bowl, was at Tanner Bartolini, the center from Wisconsin. He tested out. He tested out there. So all of a sudden, he's helped himself. But there are, to me, they'll probably be in the first round, I would say, six tackles.
Wow.
And there's a chance that someone deems their guy a first-round grade guy, because you don't know what the other folks are doing. I mean, the most since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970 was seven tackles in 2008, the Matt Ryan year that he was drafted at quarterback. There's been several years where six was a play. It's at least that, and there's a chance it could tie that, or if it's a crazy night, bust it. But just looking at the testing of this, as I was taking notes while these O-linemen ran on Sunday, Tanner Bordellini, both 40s, handsome. His 10-yard split, 1.69.
Wow.
Joe Alt at nearly 6'9", 322 pounds. His 10 split, 1.73 and 1.74, respectively. Central Florida offensive lineman Tylan Grable, both of his 40s, sub 4.99. Frank Crum from Wyoming, who had the blonde lettuce, as they call it, this huge, long, flowing locks, 4.9, 4.40. And then there's from a different level of school, South Dakota State's Garrett Greenfield, 6'6", 3.11. Highest, set the record for vertical jump for an offensive lineman at 38.5 inches. These guys are ridiculous. But at the top, they're game changers. And what we were saying earlier about, okay, we got an athlete here. Do we have a football player? I think that's what Amarius Mims is trying to show, because he only had 8 career starts at Georgia. All the other things are there. Almost 87-inch wingspan. I mean, he can reach around the corner and tap you on the shoulder and then move his hand and go, who was that?
Now,
but, yeah.
Ramon, you're having, like, a response to some of these numbers. Why is this so impressive to you?
Because, again, the sizes of these dudes is what's getting me. Like, these dudes aren't like they're just – I feel like for a while the NFL got lighter as far as the interior guys. I mean, the offensive line guys went, and they tried to go more athletic. And I even see some of these guys coming in now as recruits watching the college world. They're coming in at, like, 360, then trimming down to, like, 340, 330. But they're athletes. Like, I always thought Amarius Mims was big. I thought J.C. Latham at Alabama was big. And then you see them, Coach Mack, as you just said, like Amarius Mims. I'm not sure if there's a better-looking offensive line prospect as far as just body type that you say to yourself, if he's got the right coach, the right system, right mind, and you expect him to have that, always coming out as a five-star guy, then he should be a pro on either the right side or the left side. And then you see a guy like J.C. Latham that may be a little bit more softer of a body than, let's go, Amarius Mims. But then you see the way he moves. You watch his tape. And when you're talking about, is he a football player? Yes, they are. And it's not even just we spoke about the 6 or 7 tackles that may go in the first round. Let's talk about the top 100 potentially. In that, you have Cooper Beebe. You have Jackson Powers Johnson. You may have a Tyler Guy. You have a Jordan Morgan.
Alex Frazier.
You got the UConn guard also, who are top quality guys. Like, to be able to spread around this wealth.
You could have two dozen guys in that 100.
Easily in that 100. And not even to mention the guys that you say, yeah, we can coach him up. There's a guy or two that's going to be a project that can bode well for you. I think you got more quality. And I got to give credit to the portal. You got to give credit to the COVID year potentially to them getting an extra year, or maybe these guys that may be coming out younger having to sit behind an older guy and watch them be pros in college too. So there are some benefit to it. And you just got to appreciate the bigs. Like I said, I was just amazed at the agility and speed of them at their size. You're not supposed to be 3.46 running a 5-flat.
You know, and again, it was just it was fun to watch that group. It really was. Because, you know, and we're, you know, we like to dig a little deeper here on the OTP, you know, rather than just the bigger names. I mean, we talked about Tanner Bartolini. Brandon Coleman, the guard from TCU, 6'4", 313, ran 4.99. I mean, he'll be a fourth rounder, but he vertical jumped 34 inches, you know, at that big. Mason McCormick is a guard center from South Dakota. You know, I mean, the guy, the 5.08 40. I mean, you watch him; he can move. Christian Jones, the offensive lineman from Texas, he's an offensive tackle, 6'5", 305. I mean, that's a third round guy right there that had a solid Senior Bowl, but he showed out here at the combine. And of course, we went through. I mean, Joe Alt is. You look at him, you go, okay.
The guard from Boston College, Christian Mahogany.
Christian Mahogany.
Yeah.
I mean, so what these guys are saying is 100% true, and then. Fuaga and Fontenot from Morgan State and Washington, these dudes are up there. You got to like. I'll tell you a guy, another guy, too, because I watch these guys because we might need one. is Roger Rosengarten from Washington, the offensive tackle that was that we watched down there, 6'5", 308, 4.92, good movement. I mean, everybody was saying he's a guard. Well, you watch his movement, I mean, he could be a tackle. The way he moved his feet out there. So all of these guys did themselves. Zach Frazier from West Virginia, the mm-hmm. center.
He's
Christian Haynes from UConn,
prospect.
The guy he was talking about. I mean, I watched these guys pretty close, and you get a good player that can play for you for 6 or 8 years on the third and fourth round, you're happy.
Yep.
And some
winning.
Of these guys, they're going to go that deep.
Here on the OTP, we don't discriminate. We like all – the parts of a football game, and we have only been talking about offense the entire time that we've been here. So I feel the need, before we wrap this up, to at least acknowledge that there were defensive players in Indianapolis, because there were, and there were some guys who really had great showings. And so I'd like to hear from each of you, maybe just a defensive player or two who really stood out to you, because I feel bad that we're not giving that whole side of the ball any love, and they deserve it, or at least some of them do, right, Mac?
I look for nickel corners were outstanding. The corners were outstanding. And let me just give you some names of nickel corners. These are not the guys on the edge. These are nickel corners. Daquan Hardy from Penn State, 42.5-inch vertical jump. I mean, the dude is going to play over the slot. Andrew Phillips from Kentucky, 42-inch vertical jump. That shows you the explosion. Max Melton from Rutgers, Mike Keith's favorite interview at the Senior Bowl. Max Melton, 11.4 broad jump. I mean, he is a bull terrier, and he will be there. Mike Sanistrill from Michigan, 10.11 broad jump. He's going to be a nice, nice nickel in this league. Those are the nickel guys that I was watching just expressly. And then I'll let these guys go into the other guys on the edges, because the how many ran 4.44 or less there? I think there were 9 that ran 4.44 or less. They're players there at the cornerback. That's a deep position.
I think our OTP listeners know about Braden Fisk, so I'm not even going to mention him anymore in the combine that he had. But it's 3 other D tackles that I fell in love with watching their numbers and just watching their tape too. And it's Ruka Rohoro out of Clemson, big body guy, got so much room to grow. Chris Jenkins Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Also, him was a guy. His measurables pretty much lined up to what his dad did out of
yep.
Michigan. That was insane to see that one. I played against his dad. Now he's got a kid potentially going in the second or third round. And then the other one was Dwayne Carter, another big body guy out of Duke that performed well. And you can say to yourself, as much as we talk about this offensive line here in Tennessee, there is a need for defensive tackle help too. I like these guys. And we heard Brian Callahan talk about he want guys from big programs. These dudes all play big ball and understand and how to play it in. Each one of them has a mean streak in them that I enjoy and like. And you paired it up with a guy like Jeffrey Simmons. I mean, again, the body types of these dudes suggest that they can be space eaters, but also playmakers too.
Yeah, Dwayne Carter from Duke is one of those that I think coaches are going to try to figure out where does he play, because he played on every position on the defensive line in his time as a Blue Devil there. I've got three guys, and I will mention Braden Fisk from Florida State, because here's this guy at 6'3", 292. One of my favorite interviews from the Senior Bowl. 33.5-inch vertical leap, 9'9" broad jump, 40-yard dash, 4.78. In fact, he was one of seven defensive linemen with a sub-5-second 40-yard dash. And then Marshawn Neyland, his former teammate who still was at Western Michigan. Marshawn Neyland, 6'3", 267, 7.02 three-cone drill, 33.5-inch vertical leap, 9.11 broad, a 4.75 40. And then a safety that I've kind of been watching out of Oregon, Evan Williams. Evan Williams, 40.5-inch vertical leap, 10.6 broad. Golly, I mean, there's so many. And in these defensive players, I mean, one of the top pass rushers at the top from Alabama, Dallas Turner, 4.46 40. Chop Robinson, Penn State, 4.48 40. Some of these guys have got some wheels. But I really like Marshawn Neyland, and I really like Braden Fisk to go with him.
The names that they're bringing are guys that are second, third-day guys, which is important because the Dallas Turners, the Jared Verses, those guys are gone.
Yep.
Okay, they're going to be gone, and rightfully so. Chop Robinson worked himself right up into that at the Combine. So these names are bringing up. The draft is much more than about the first round.
It is. And I got one guy that I think took his stock up even more, and we talked about him at the Senior Bowl at cornerback, Quinyon Mitchell.
Coach, look, Quinyon Mitchell is no longer – you're right.
Yeah.
He's the worst-kept secret in this draft.
It is no secret. He may be – and I sat with a big group of defensive back coaches. They're looking like – because, you know, Terrion Arnold is a really clean player.
Yeah.
He ran 4.5. Now, he's the number one corner. He ran, but he's a very clean player. He's sticky. He's instinctive. Played at Alabama. He's and
he versatile because he went from safety to corner.
Right. He may very well be the first corner taken. But Quinyon Mitchell has done nothing but elevate himself in the eyes of people that make a decision in the National Football League.
And the reason I bring that up, Coach Mack, is he may be middle first round, and let's say somebody want to deal with the Titans, and you got to decide if you want to go get a corner, you want to go get a tackle, or if there's an edge because the quarterback draft, as you always speak about, pushes you back and also pushes good talent back. Like, Quinyon Mitchell may be hard to pass on just because of what you expect him to do and what he's already done in college, and, of course, his numbers.
Let me say something else about that. We talk about getting into the mindset of guys. Now, he had a chance to get in that transfer portal numbers of times. But he said, you know what, Toledo gave me a chance. I'm going to stay here at Toledo. And he's done not only that, but he's worked himself. Every test that he's been given, the Senior Bowl was a huge test. He stepped up, mastered it. The Combine, mastered it. But the fact that he said, you know what, I'll stay here because they gave me a chance.
Very Pat Tillman-esque.
Very
right?
Much so.
In terms of loyalty and staying in a spot, Quinyon Mitchell will be a footnote at his college at Toledo. He'll just be the second player in their athletic history that has been drafted in the first round of the draft. Decades ago, Dan Williams, a defensive lineman who had a nice career, was a first-round pick out of there. He'll be the first-round pick out of the MAC conference since the Titans took Corey Davis in 2017. It's done. I mean, I would be shocked if he wasn't a first-round pick, and I don't think that's going to happen.
What's even cooler, too, with him, he's supposed to run fast, all right, with his projections. 20 reps under 225.
Thank you.
Can we mention that? Like, everybody got something dirty about that. We're talking about the big boys running, right? That ain't what we do, okay? Little guys don't bench like this. They may get 8 to 12 or even 15. He pushed out 20 reps on 225.
And a guy with longer arms, too,
yeah.
Now. He's not, you know.
You know what that tells you? He's worked at it.
He's a grinder.
He's a grinder.
Yep.
You guys, this is so great. I'm having a little moment over here. The combine is in the rearview mirror now, but there's still so much to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
As we continue on heading towards the draft at the end of April, April 25th through 27th in Detroit. That is the NFL draft. But before we get there, we still have pro days at schools to get through. We still have 30 visits where the individual clubs bring people in, get to spend a little bit more time with them, get to know them a little bit better. So we still have ways to go here. Do we have any final thoughts as we are wrapping up this portion of the pre-draft process and moving on towards Detroit?
One more thing. Free agency.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Here it
comes. It's knocking on the door. That's the next on the docket.
The thing you learn, and I heard somebody on this panel say it, don't be an IE. Don't be an instant evaluator. Keep your powder dry. We don't draft till the end of April.
Fall in love with the tape, not the tag on the wall.
And it'll be fascinating, too, with your free agent mark right there, what resets or settles the draft as far as the quarterbacks. You got a bunch of quarterbacks who have valuable playing time in the NFL, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, et cetera, that may reshape what the draft does also.
And that there's two teams and two quarterback situations that I think mold that, to his point. For obviously, the first overall pick with the Chicago Bears, do they deal Justin Fields? And if they deal them to Atlanta, who's sitting at 8, then that's the two teams I'm talking about. But if for some reason Atlanta isn't able to make that happen, or they bring in Kirk Cousins and sign him, that's going to change. You know, there's two trade partners right there with who these young guys are at the top of that quarterback pod. But that will shape it for that first night of the draft.
This time of year, when I was coaching, you start to work the phones. That's fascinating.
There's just so much good happening right now. There's so much excitement, and we're going to cover all of it here on the OTP. We've got you, OT people. Don't worry. So subscribe, comment, tell all your friends about the OTP, because we have all the information right here, everything you need to know, and these guys are going to help us all along the way. So for Ramon Foster, Coach Mack, Rhett Bryan, I'm Amy Wells, and this has been the OTP. Where the legends go, everybody knows it's out.